Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The Erie County Executive Candidates in Conversation. Now, Lynn Dixon on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Good morning, 8:01 on WBEN, and we're happy to have Lynn Dixon with us for the next hour. Good morning.
Good morning, Susan. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, you are going up against a two-term incumbent. 3 weeks from today, Election Day, but 11 days away from early voting here in Erie County. And wondering, first of all, how pleased you are with the campaign so far.
Susan, I'm happy with the direction things are going in. I'm happy with the feedback that I've been receiving from people all across Erie County, and I feel good about where we're at right now.
What do you hear from people when you're out across the county that's encouraging to you?
So I hear from a lot of people who say they are looking for change. I hear from a lot of people who are frustrated with this county executive for a number of reasons. I hear a lot about the roads, for sure. If you go back a couple of months, I heard a lot about the Green Light Bill. People were asking me where I stood on that. Then over the course of the summer, late summer, and as we got into fall, it really, the focus turned to more about roads. A lot of people are bringing that up with me. And so there's a lot of frustration that I'm sensing in Erie County, and the residents have been very positive.
There are twice as many Democrats enrolled in Erie County as Republicans. You're an Independent Party member. But why do you think you have a shot?
So the party enrollment thing doesn't bother me, because I've never viewed public service as being political and partisan victories. I think in Erie County government especially, you're doing the work of the people, and so it should not matter what party affiliation you are. Having said that, right now I represent a district that's nearly 3-1 Democrat, and I've had success in elections and re-elections in that district, and I think it's because I go out and I do the work in the community and I listen to the people. And I think that's something that's missing right now in the county executive's office, is listening to the people.
You mentioned roads. I love talking about roads.
Oh, good.
Let's get into it. I know the complaints people have. Those are kind of self-explanatory with the roads. What would you maybe do differently when it comes to managing, whether it's road reconstruction or pothole filling, things like that?
Brian, I think, first of all, with respect to the road reconstruction, I feel like we are always playing catch up. We are always reacting. We're being reactive instead of proactive. If we had a 10-year plan, it takes the politics out of government. Also, with maintenance, one of the problems, and of course, in Buffalo and Western New York, our roads are not going to last as long as communities in the South because of the weather that we have. But having said that, you can still extend the length of the road work if you do a better maintenance plan, if you're better with the ditching and removing water from the roadway and that sort of thing. And I don't think we do enough of that, just road maintenance to extend the life of the road.
When it comes to roads, it seems like there's a perception that roads get paved. You know, it's political how roads get paved. It depends on whose district it's in and who, you know, gets the squeaky wheel. How can you change that?
Well, I do believe that it's political, and I will use as one example Legislator John Mills, who was chairman of the legislature a few years ago. He had received a message from Mark Poloncarz, and it was a voicemail message in which he said, I need your vote on something that Mark was pushing, and in exchange, if you give me your vote on this, I will fix this road for you. So that, in my estimation, is putting politics before public safety. And that's a problem. You know, these roads are not his roads. They're your roads. They're our roads. So we have to treat this community like that. We have to approach things from a very community mindset and not a political mindset. Right now, we are seeing the scramble to do roads at the end of road construction season. And I've had numerous people say to me, you know, what's all this? All of a sudden, we're seeing all this patching done that we've been waiting years and years and years for. And I said, well, you should wish that every year was an election year, because then you would get your roads done. Mark Poloncarz is sending out mailers in the areas where roads are getting done right now, with a letter from him, not his public works commissioner, and nice glossy photo with some highlights of what I'm doing in Erie County. And that, to me, is a political mailer that you all are paying for. And so there is politics that infiltrates road work right now. And that's to take the politics out of road work. You identify the roads, and you work closely with the highway superintendents in each community to identify where they see the greatest needs are. Because even though it's a county road, as we know, a lot of times people don't know who mm-hmm. owns the road, and their first point of contact oftentimes is with their towns, to hear where they're getting the complaints and doing the road work that way. I don't think that you should bargain or horse trade road work for anything. And I do think we need to do better maintenance plans.
You know, yesterday Poloncarz said in studio to us that it's the Greater Buffalo Niagara Regional Transportation Council
mm-hmm.
that identifies the roads, gives them a score, and that's how the it's how the system is prioritized. Are you saying that it's not that way?
Well, he's on record as saying, I'll do this road if you give me this. And I should also point out that we borrow a significant amount of money for road work. It's not just all right out of the budget. So we do a lot of capital. And we've borrowed $92 million since 2012. $26 million of that remained on the table. So you're paying interest on money that was borrowed to do road work that's not getting done. So that money is not going to work for you right now.
He said yesterday that kind of the budget for road work, they're at maybe their limit, and he doesn't want to make any cuts to fund more for the roads in a given year. Would you approach it differently?
Well, again, he's leaving money on the table, so I don't see it as making cuts in favor of road work. I just think it's about priorities, and it's about when money is allocated specifically for road work that it gets done. I should also point out that, you know, we have some of the lowest interest rates historically that we've seen in terms of doing the bonding to do road work, to do additional road work. It doesn't mean making cuts. It just means when money is allocated for road work, to do the road work.
He was explaining, too, yesterday about if there's two roads that get the same score, but one's heavily traveled and one isn't, mm-hmm. you know, that one, the heavily traveled road, will get the priority.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that second road just getting pushed back further and further?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I look at some of the roads, Zora Valley, for example, which is obviously very costly. Repair and reconstruction effort, but it's been a problem for a very, very long time. And to the residents that live on there or have businesses nearby there or who need to travel on it, you hear about first responders that can't even use the road now when they need to get to an emergency. You can't just say forget it either, because again, it's a county road. Nobody else can fix those. That is our responsibility. It is up to us. And I point to Lake Avenue in the village of Blaisdell because that's a community that I represent. I sent a letter to the county executive in 2012 saying this road is in terrible shape. Please address it. And here we are in 2019. The road work just got started a couple of weeks ago. We approved the funding to do Lake Avenue back in 2016. A lot of times, and also, you know, that community canceled Memorial Day Parade 2 years in a row because of the condition of the road that they would have to march on. I understand that you can't get to every road. I mean, we own 1,200 road miles, you know, so I know that's difficult. But what we can do is more than we're doing. And I will point out, too, that Mark Poloncarz's entire campaign 8 years ago was fix the roads, fix the parks. And here we are 8 years later, and the roads are not in better shape, and neither are the parks.
For the roads, does the county bear maybe too much responsibility? Is there a way to transfer that responsibility back to some of these towns and other municipalities? Because you mentioned how much you know, miles of roads that the county has to deal with. It is it too much for one municipality to bear?
Well, there are situations, for example, with plowing the roads, where the municipalities have a contract with the county where they plow a good number of road miles of county roads in the wintertime. So that's addressed already in a lot of the outlying communities with respect to the plowing piece of it. Also, there's a program in place that if the county will come in and do a road reconstruction for some of the roads that exist just within one particular community, and then the community takes the road back forevermore. And that has been done in a handful of cases, including in Hamburg, where I live. So there are situations where the county can come in, repair the road up to a standard that's expected, and then turn that road over to the county. Some of the communities want to take part and some don't. It's certainly, you know, a lot of the roads that the county has at one point were more rural, and now in recent years there's been more development, and so the roads are traveled more, and so the roads deteriorate more quickly. But that's just all part of It still doesn't relieve us of our responsibility to take care of the road.
Let me ask you about a particular road, the Buffalo Skyway, which is in Erie County. Mm-hmm. Congressman Brian Higgins has said it's coming down, all of it. Governor Cuomo recently completed a big study awarding $100,000 to a firm for their best design proposal, which calls for part of that Skyway to remain standing. Where is this going? Whose decision is this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I am one of the 43,000 vehicles that travel the Skyway on an almost daily basis. And I know what happens when the Skyway is not open, and I see the inconvenience for travelers and commuters. So I think that, you know, the Skyway has provided a quick way to get into the city for years for Southtown residents. And I think what we cannot do is just say we tear the Skyway down without a viable plan that is actually, you know, getting us moving traffic as quickly as the Skyway does. And I haven't seen, with respect to the plan that was put in place and talk of what they were going to do with Tip Street, I don't see traffic moving very quickly, and I think it would cause a number of delays. I remember when former State Senator Mark Grisani, I believe he was head of the Transportation Committee at the time in the Senate, and he held a public meeting, and he invited the public to come and hear their comments, and I think that would be a great start, again, to hear comments and see if they've changed over the course of the last few years. I can tell you, when I was at that particular meeting, the overwhelming majority of people that attended that meeting wanted the Skyway to stay. And I know developers have voiced their opposition to taking down the Skyway, because when you talk about a number of costly projects for this community, you really have to start prioritizing and saying which ones are the most would make the greatest impact for Buffalo and Western New York, because you can't do all of that.
Do you get worried when it comes to the Skyway? Because, you know, the governor comes in and starts talking about this design competition. I'm pretty sure he doesn't take the Skyway every day, or, you know, really lives around the Skyway and knows how it impacts Buffalo, or doesn't impact Buffalo for that matter, and kind of has this, you know, grand idea and says, wow, this would be great to bring to Buffalo, and it is a state road, so it's, you know, maybe the state's final say in this. Do you ever get concerned that maybe local voices are being pushed out of that conversation?
Oh, I get concerned all the time that local voices are getting pushed out of the conversation in Albany. And I think having a public meeting like that, again, would help relieve some of those concerns of residents. But I also think that's what public service is. You go out in the communities to better understand what the people are dealing with and how these decisions impact people truly on a daily basis.
Let's just turn the tables up to a little bit. Your opponent's been running ads with you and convicted Congressman Chris Collins. For the record, has Collins influenced you in any way? And has he been part of this campaign in any way?
No. And I will say that's where, you know, you talk about a lying, deceitful campaign against me. And that this is it. First and foremost, he photoshopped a Purple Heart veteran out of a photo and photoshopped Chris Collins in to look like I was standing with a big happy face next to Chris Collins. Secondly, I said this to Mark Poloncarz last week. I said, Mark, I've talked to you more in the last 24 hours than I have to Chris Collins in the past 8 years. It's deceptive. It's not true. He's been trying to fight this fight for 10 years now. A few years ago, they sent out some ridiculous mailer that I was out partying with the congressman the night before an important vote in Washington. Never happened. I mean, just never happened. I don't believe I've ever taken any campaign contributions from him. I haven't talked to him about this campaign. He's trying to relive 2011 all over again because he enjoyed such great success in 2011. I am not Chris Collins. I am not close to being Chris Collins. I'm not the same personality. I'm not the same person. It's ridiculous. And he keeps wanting to run an eight-year-old campaign. And it's not true.
A lot of what he's alleging in these ads has to deal with when Collins was county executive himself and your relationship with the county executive. You have a relationship with the county executive now, which is Mark Poloncarz. How would you say that relationship is different, say, between Collins and Poloncarz? And how would you describe your relationship as a legislator with the county executive?
Brian, I am not one of those people that takes to Twitter and social media bashing other electeds. I believe that you need to honor the office and that you have to find ways to work together. So prior to my running for county executive, I was never out publicly tweeting, trashing the county executive. You find ways to work together even if you don't agree with them. And even when I was part of the majority caucus for 4 years, we found ways to work with the county executive, even if we didn't like everything that came to us. But there was a certain level of respect. It's about being the adult in the room sometimes. And so you find ways to work together. Same thing, you know, with the former county executive, and you know, you find ways to work together. I will point out that I was a legislator for 2 years when Chris Collins was in office. The very first budget that Chris Collins sent over to us, we made amendments to restore some of the cuts that he had made. The second budget that he sent to us was his budget, but then he lost his bid for reelection, so that it was going to be the budget that Mark Poloncarz inherited and then would have to work with. So I worked with the county executive-elect at that time to put in place some things that he felt he needed in the budget to get started on the right foot with his vision. And we did that. So, you know, I believe in working together. I don't believe in, like, this animosity all the time. But I also believe in allowing other voices to be heard. And what I've seen over the course, especially of the last couple of years, is that it's his vision and his decision and his views and nobody else's. And we don't get to provide any input. There's no deliberation, discussion, debate in the legislature. When we have an issue that we would like to be taken up, more often than not, it's tabled. And that's become very frustrating to me because I don't think the voices of Erie County residents are being heard. And it's not a matter of political party. It's a matter of getting the work done for the people.
You know, I think you raised a lot of eyebrows because of something you just said when you announced that you're running for county executive, because there are people in county government who will send out the tweet or the press release or something like that, bashing another member of either the legislature or the county executive himself, and you are typically not one of those people, but yet now you're going to run a campaign against the county executive. Has that been tough to change that mindset at all over the last few months?
Brian, my happy place is to be nice to people. You know, that's how I was raised. That's how my parents raised me. Growing up, we were always the house that people came to. You know, it was my siblings are the nicest people you'll ever want to meet. So it's an adjustment, but I think it's important to point out to people some things that maybe they didn't know were going on. And part of the reason, you know, they didn't know was going on because we were, I think, in the legislature, especially when we were in the majority, we were being respectful of the office and we were trying to get things done.
The divisiveness on the national level, the toxic atmosphere that is there every single day, you know, the us versus them, do you find that that's trickling down? And on your campaign stops, Lynn, are people talking about that? Do they like this different tone that you're trying to bring?
I think people are very frustrated across this country and across this community about the great political divide. You know, right now you're being forced into one corner or the other. You're not allowed to find yourself somewhere in the middle. You're not allowed to be able to think on your own. If you have this letter next to your name, then you must be all this. If you have this letter next to your name, then you must be all that. And that doesn't move us forward. That attitude and that mindset does not move us forward. And yes, I've seen over the course of the last several years a greater divide in our country. And it's been coming for the last decade or so. And it's really at a tipping point now. And it's really unfortunate. You know, even when you talk about taking, like they'll put pictures up, right? Or you took, well, when you're in public office, you work with people of all political stripes, or you're supposed to, and you know, now it's like you shook hands with that person once, so you must be this or you mm-hmm. must be that, and that's not what moves us forward. All that does is just keep feeding the beast.
You mentioned you can see maybe the further political divide over the last several years, but you've probably talked to maybe more people around Erie County over the last few months than you ever have before, you know, going mm-hmm. all around during the campaign. When you talk to people in person, do you notice a greater divide? Because I feel like I notice it online, you know, when I listen to comments coming into this station or elsewhere in the media. But, you know, everyday interactions, I don't see it as much.
If you don't talk politics, yeah. Right? It's like some things you don't bring up at the Thanksgiving table, you know, and politics is one of them. Yes, I've noticed a divide. I've noticed a frustration among people. But I also feel like people just, you know, so many people that I talk to, they just want government to do what government's supposed to do and not, and otherwise kind of stay out of their way. I think people just are tired of a lot of the rhetoric and they just want to see things get done and they just, you know, want to carry on with their lives.
Let's bring up this green light law that you mentioned earlier this morning. This is one of the issues that has kind of risen in this part of the state. There's been a little bit of an uproar, backlash over this measure that was approved by the state legislature. This would allow undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses. What has the backlash been to this? And are you optimistic that Mickey Kearns, the county clerk, can overturn this?
The feedback that I've gotten in the community has been overwhelmingly against the green light bill, overwhelmingly. And as a matter of fact, I had a primary in the independence line in June, and part of that effort was to reach out to independence party members who are going to be voting. And, you know, so many of them, the first question, that was what they asked me, where do you stand on this issue? So it's definitely a hot button issue. Mickey Kearns later this month will be in court. This issue will be in court later this month. I have every confidence that he will succeed because it puts you in such a difficult position. Which supersedes which? Do you follow federal law? Do you follow state law? And then the undue I guess, the concern that it puts on civil servants that are working at the local DMV, that are not trained to understand what, you know, you bring in documentation from whatever country, and you're not trained to know what that documentation is. Is it, you know, is it legal? Is it real? I took my son for his permit back in May. I had to provide his Social Security card, his passport, my driver's license. We filled out a bunch of paperwork just to prove he was who he was and I was who I am. And so now you're taking these documents that they've never seen before. And how are they to know what's real and what's not? And now they're being asked to make that determination. And it's concerning to them, and it puts undue pressure on them as well.
What do you see as the county executive's role in all this? Now, Mark Poloncarz has filed the suit on behalf of Mickey Kearns and kind of has said, aside from that, like, that's what I can do. What do you see as a role, or what further role could he have?
Well, the county attorney's office did, and the county attorney's office serves for the county. The county attorney is not the attorney for the county executive. But I think first and foremost, there's a lot that has happened in Albany this past year that happens pretty quickly at rapid pace, that sometimes with no thought as to how it impacts local governments. And this would impact county government. It would impact the budget. I will use as an example the bail reform bill. Regardless of where you stand on the bail reform, the DA came over to see us a couple of weeks ago and outlined some of the issues that now presents. And the state has said it will cost county governments $100 million to implement the bail reform bill. Now, we looked at the extending the election from October 26th to November 5th. That's costing Erie County alone $3 million. Some of that is being reimbursed by the state, but not all of it. So they pass these laws without thinking through the impact both financially and how these counties are supposed to execute some of this. So it does impact us because it will impact our budget, and it impacts the people who are working for Erie County government.
It sounds like you think that maybe we need a stronger advocate or a stronger voice in Albany, maybe pushing back against the so-called unfunded mandates.
Yes, and 90% of Erie County's budget right now is mandated services, and the costs are mandated. So we have that 10%, which is always where, you know, we deliberate and discuss about what's important: roads, libraries, cultural organizations, etc. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm happy to work with anybody that is willing to work with you. But at some point, you know, the governor has to understand that sometimes what works for New York City is not going to work for Buffalo and Erie County in Western New York. And I think so often you see the association of governments, of, you know, county governments throughout the state that push back on a number of the issues that continue to get passed. And it's because it's so predominantly New York City focused that I think we are negatively impacted many times here in Erie County. And I think that we do need to stand up. We can only do so much. We have not increased population. We're already being taxed and fed to death. And then every time you put forth another mandate, it's just costing us more money. And we've had enough. And yeah, I do think you need to push back.
With all three chambers in Albany controlled by Democrats, is it making it that much harder in Erie County to push back?
I think so. I think because, you know, and again, it's about downstate power, and that hurts us. But I will also point out that, you know, this county executive a couple of years ago in an interview in Albany did say he sees himself more aligned with New York City progressives, and if that's where he is and where he views everything, then that's great for him. But I don't know that that's great for Erie County, because we're a different community. We're more Midwest really than we are New York City.
Lynn Dixon in studio with us, and let's talk about one of the biggest decisions that the Erie County Executive will be making in the next term, and that is over a Bills stadium and a Bills lease. Why is it important, Lynn, that you be the person in charge with Erie County Executive?
Well, look, you see all across the country, whenever the Bills play away, you see this big contingent wherever they go. You have loyal Bills fans that no matter where they now live, they live, eat, and breathe, you know, Buffalo Bills football. Obviously, it's very important to this community. And whether it's in Orchard Park or whether it's somewhere else, that discussion will be had in private. But the Pegulas have done this study, have interviewed thousands of people. And I will say that the Pegulas have shown a devotion and dedication to Buffalo and Western New York. They've invested tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars above and beyond the sports franchises to be here. And I have every reason to believe that based on the information they get from that survey, and based on what their own personal investment has been and will continue to be, that they're going to want what's right for taxpayers as well. Taxpayers have to basically have a seat at the table, and that's what, as county executive, you are. You represent the taxpayers of Erie County. So you don't negotiate something that is not going to be good for the taxpayers that your children's children, I can look at Brian with having a child coming, that your children's children are going to be saddled with. It has to be the right fit for Buffalo. It can't be a Dallas. It's got to be a Buffalo, and it will. And I believe that that's exactly what the Pegulas envisioned. We only have one Fortune 500 company in Western New York. We can't do that whole corporate thing. And I don't think, and it wouldn't work in Buffalo anyway, because that's not the kind of fan base we have. Mm-hmm.
I look at the potential for a negotiation, whether it's a new stadium or maybe some big remodel of what's out in Orchard Park, and it just seems like whether it's the county, the state, you know, whoever is talking on behalf of taxpayers who will be asked to, you know, I'm sure foot some of the bill, that we, you know, as a community, are coming from such a high ground in these negotiations because of that investment that you mentioned. You know, the Sabres, the Harbor Center, the other sports teams, the new restaurants, new buildings, and everything that nobody really believes. You know, if they try and dangle this, well, the Bills could move. I mean, who believes that that's an actual option? It seems like the taxpayers do have the power in this negotiation.
You know, I truly believe the Pegulas, I mean, the biggest concern was Ralph Wilson in his later years. He said he would keep the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo as long as he was here. The big concern was who was going to buy the Bills, because that was when the opportunity would present itself to leave. When the purchaser became the Pegulas, that concern went away. They've demonstrated time and again their commitment to Buffalo and Western New York. They've not shown me one bit at all that they have any desire to follow, you know, some big carrot dangling elsewhere. Mm-hmm. They're committed to this community, and you know, and they have a stake in it. I mean, both Terry and Kim have some roots here, and I don't think that that's the biggest concern. I really don't. I think that wherever the negotiations lead us, it will be the best for taxpayers and for Bills fans, and it will continue to show the Pegulas' commitment to Buffalo and Western New York.
If it is a new stadium, what are your concerns about what would be the old stadium?
That is a concern, absolutely, and that has to be part of any discussion. You can't just pack up and leave and then just leave that there. That's a big concern. Having said that, there have been, I think we all have had some really happy moments and memories there, and some heartbreaking ones as well. But Orchard Park, it's a neat place. Like, I remember several years ago, a friend of mine from Pittsburgh came to visit, and we were going to a game. And they just thought it was so neat that you had this stadium kind of just set in the middle of a neighborhood almost. And so it's a unique experience. But whatever happens, it will be the best for the taxpayers. It won't, it won't put the taxpayers so burdened. Those will come, and the talks will come, and I feel very positive about a good outcome for everyone.
Not too far down the road, one of the other things that Erie County puts a lot of money into, and that is ECC or SUNY Erie. There's a lot of questions about the future of that, with some of the enrollment going down, a little bit of uncertainty as to what the future of education really is going to look like, what people 10 years from now are going to do for college or secondary education. What do you see as the future of that school and the county's involvement in funding?
Well, in the legislature, we've added additional funding for ECC every year, but I will say I voted against the ECC budget this year, primarily because I'm concerned that the numbers may not be right, and that we are seeing a decrease in enrollment and an increase in tuition, and whether it's the curriculum offerings, it's not working. And I think at the board level, we need to have people on the board of not just ECC, but the other boards where the county executive has appointments. We need to put people on these boards with true vision, with an expertise in whatever board they are appointed to. I spoke with a manufacturer who said to me, I have more work waiting that I would like to do, but I can't get done because we have an aging workforce that's retiring, but we don't have a trained workforce to fill these positions. So they have jobs, but they don't have people to fill them. So we need to do a better job of not just keeping young people here, bringing young people here, but training them. And to that extent, looking to ECC as to how we train people for maybe the manufacturing and trades and boosting that curriculum and working with the private sector and developing core curriculum that could allow them the proper training to then jump right into a job right out of their training and out of school.
Does the county have the pull if, a county executive were to say to SUNY Erie now, we want you to be less of a general education, less of a general associate's degree, and provide more specialized training programs and, maybe certificates in very specified fields in a manufacturing or, who knows, whatever other job sector could be. Does the county have the pull to say, listen, if you want to continue here, this is the path you need to take?
Well, they can put leadership in place that can help push that forward, and that is with board appointments. And also, President Hokoi is in, I believe, the second year of a three-year contract. I don't know what his desires are going forward, if he wants to stay here, if he wants to move on. But, tough decisions are going to have to be made in the terms of leadership to move ECC forward and bring it to the point where it needs to be, because we're not there right now.
Could ECC ever be independent of the county?
That's a good question. But you look across the state, and all the community colleges receive a certain level of funding that is required, from the county. The ECC will often say that it doesn't receive enough funding from the county, and that's a fair argument. But I think you also have to be able to see the return on the investment you make too. And we're just not seeing that right now.
It is so much is made about training, like you mentioned, for these jobs of the future. The Northland Training Center that, there's so much buzz around that. Is it safe to say that Erie needs something like an Erie Community College, that couldn't just go away and be replaced by nothing?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely think community colleges are very important, and we do need them. But I think we need to rethink what we're doing there. And, you know, just an interesting point, too, and this was brought up to me a couple of weeks ago, but when you think, so I have a son that works at McDonald's, and he makes more money than the aides that help take care of my mom. And so that's another issue where you have these aides that are, and again, we have an aging population, and we want to try and keep them in our parents or grandparents in their home as long as we can. And that's another thing where you have these aides that they're not, people aren't going to these kinds of jobs because they're not paying well enough, and they're not looking for the training to do this kind of work because it's not paying well enough. But, you know, sometimes maybe we have to rethink our priorities with respect to that as well.
Tesla at Riverbend. I know that you've been calling out, you want an audit on this. I'm wondering, the $750 million that the state threw at it, do you think that this region could have gotten more bang for its buck if that money had gone elsewhere?
Absolutely. When you think about it right now, and yes, there are a few hundred people working there, but right now it's about $1 million a job at Tesla right now. And so it's a $750 million, you know, public subsidized risk. And I've said all along, I would love to be wrong on this. I would love to be proven wrong, because I think if Tesla became what we had all hoped it would be, it would be a game changer. Unfortunately, it's not meeting the benchmarks. And it's $750 million. Imagine what that kind of investment would have done for downtown Buffalo. And, you know, we, in calling for the audit, this wasn't just on a whim. I mean, this is after a few years of asking about what's going on and can we tour the facility and, you know, and looking for some transparency and not really getting what we were looking for, which is the reason for this. But it is a concern. And look, if you had some small business in Buffalo or Erie County, some family-owned business that's been here for generations, and they were falling, you'd see yelling and screaming from some of our elected leaders, and then where's the yelling and screaming about this? I mean, we're not seeing it right now, and that's troubling to me.
What could you do as a county executive to help bring that hammer from the state? Because it seems like these targets are always kind of moving around as to how many jobs they need and by when, and the punishment is, a lot of it remains unclear.
Demand transparency first and foremost. I mean, we aren't getting the transparency that we deserve, and this is what's troubling sometimes in politics and in government when you have when control is in the hands of such a few that they're able to control the message, or they're able to control what you know and what you don't know. And that's why I asked for the audit, because I think it's important that we just see where we are in all of this. And again, if things are moving along and things, there's going to be an uptick, and that's great. You know, good. Prove me wrong. I'd like to be proven wrong, but I don't see it right now. We have invested $750 million into this plant, and it's a multi-billionaire who has taken every opportunity along the way to get subsidies and other projects that he's testing out. And why aren't we demanding more accountability? We should be.
Do you think the state would ever see penalty money paid by Elon Musk?
$40 million for Elon Musk, I don't think is it's not going to break his bank account, right? That's for sure. But I would hope that whatever was set in place is followed through on. But I just look at Tesla and I just think it's just not what we were promised.
Something we talked with Mark Poloncarz with about yesterday was this ErieNet idea that he had. It was included partially some funding for kind of looking at infrastructure in the most recent budget. How big of an issue do you see internet access throughout Erie County as, and do you kind of support the idea of a municipal pipeline or build out, or do you think there's another solution?
I believe in some of the more rural communities that accessing it's still difficult. I remember when I first got into the legislature in 2010, I was out at an event in North Collins at the library, and there were some people that were sitting in the parking lot in their cars to access the Wi-Fi there. So that was back in 2010. But I will say that other communities that have tried this, it has failed. It has not worked. And it's a very expensive proposition. I am in favor of providing that access to the rural communities. I think everybody should be able to, in the times that we're living in now, with 5G coming, I think that more are going to be able to access it anyways. But the communities that have tried this before, it has not worked. It has failed miserably. And this would be the largest municipality ever to attempt this. And the cost would be out of this world.
Well, so what's the solution?
What's
the solution?
Because if you don't have internet, it's a deal breaker for businesses that want to operate in those areas, right?
Well, so many that I've spoken with in this industry, and it's not just one company, right? So it's feedback that I've sought from others as well, that 5G will really help with this situation. But again, I'm willing to explore the notion. I've supported that part of it with the county executive, but I don't see, I think it's cost prohibitive based on what I'm currently being told and based on what other communities have tried and it hasn't succeeded. But I have been willing, and this is, again, shows you that I'm willing, I'm open to the ideas of others and to see what might work and what might not. I just know that, you know, the feedback that I've got has not been positive about this. But I do believe, yes, that, and I think, you know, the time is coming sooner rather than later then that access will be for everyone, because you cannot continue. I mean, even that story I told you about in 2010, advancements have been made since then. Where it's I was just out in North Collins on Saturday, and you know, I could you can access. So I think we are coming around, and it's too slow for sure for the rural communities that deserve it. But look, the rural communities also deserve good roads, and they're not getting good roads. Like if we, you know, let's fix what we can for them that we are responsible for right away, too. But yeah, they deserve absolutely in these rural communities. And, you know, I think they're often the long forgotten part of Erie County as well.
How can you light a fire if it's not the county itself putting, you know, setting the lines for like a fiber optic or 5G service? How can you light the fire under a Verizon or one of these other companies who, I mean, it's been years and they've still refused to kind of expand their footprint past where they are already?
I think moving forward, I think the technology is changing on a regular basis. And from what my understanding is, a lot of these companies see that they're sort of waiting. They know 5G is coming, and a lot of them looking to expand are sort of waiting for some of this, you know, to happen. And I believe that the rural communities should be served. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not privy to the conversations that have been had with some of the leaders now, but and I don't know if it took a sour note why. But, you know, my approach has always been working together. I mean, that's how I've been since I first got into the legislature, and I would continue to do that. I don't know why those conversations have faltered.
Lynn, in our final minute, you showed some polling in the summer that showed a very tight race for county executive. With just 3 weeks to go until Election Day, do you think it's still as close?
Oh, I absolutely believe it's a close race. I have every reason to believe that I can win this. I think, you know, sometimes when you are in an office like that for 8 years and you sit in an echo chamber and you think you have all the answers and you don't listen to people, people are frustrated and they want to be heard. And that's what I'm hearing over and over and over again. And it's not about me. It's about the residents of Erie County, and they deserve a voice.
So you two are going to debate Thursday night.
Yes.
And Friday morning.
Yes.
What else is left to be said?
I don't know, Brian. Good question. That might be the hardest question I've gotten yet. We have debated a lot of these issues already. And I think it's just getting, you know, continuing to get the message out. Because honestly, I've been on the campaign trail now for 9 months. But a lot of people don't really pay attention until after Labor Day. And a lot of people don't pay attention until it's you know, in front of them. So however we can get the message to the front doorstep of folks, we do. And whether it's a debate at St. Joe's, and I should I not tell them, Susan, where my son goes to school?
Yeah, don't bring up Canisius.
or our debate on Thursday night, then we'll do it.
All right. Well, Lynn, we appreciate the time and you coming out here to help us with a discussion. I think people kind of learned a little bit more about you than they would in a debate setting, which I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more of later on this week and anything else. But I guess have fun the rest of the week. It's going to be a busy one for you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Lynn Dixon, and you can find the entire conversation, yesterday's too, with Mark Poloncarz at WBEN.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.